This is news director Larissa Donovan continuing on the campaign trail with the Meet the Candidates series ahead of the general election, the midterm, coming up on November 8th. I'm chatting with a former fire chief for the city of Bemidji. It's David Hofer. Welcome to the studios, Captain Hofer.
Hey, thanks, Larissa. I'm really glad to be here and talk a little bit about some of my thoughts and beliefs as a Ward 4 City Council candidate.
Now, I used to live in Ward 4. It's a fabulous ward, very diverse, and, you know, it's like, it's really, really big, too. I think, is it the biggest ward in the, like, geographical distance?
You know, gosh, I don't know for sure now if it's the largest one geographically with the annexation of Northern Township and Ward 3, but
that's right.
Yeah. So geographically speaking, Ward 4 kind of stretches down in the south end in the industrial park, pretty much all the way up to the area near Home Depot. So it's kind of that southwest side of Bemidji. So very unique areas and neighborhoods within the ward. So we've got that far south end. We've got the west end around Lake Irvin. We've got some of the downtown area, really up to 5th Street. So that downtown core, kind of that near north end too is what I call it, kind of that area, Mississippi Park.
Yeah, that's where I used to live, right around that Mississippi Park.
And then that far west end, that conifer area, then the stuff that's way out west. We have a few streets that are in city limits off of Adams, too. So, yeah, big area, really diverse group of folks in Ward 4. So
what inspired you to throw your name into this race?
Sure, yeah. As you had mentioned, Larissa, I was fire chief here in Bemidji for just a few days shy of 11 years. I'm retired in December 31st of 2020. Kind of totally unplugged here for a little bit from civic duty. I've been a firefighter for 32 years now, continue to do that in a part-time capacity now, non-managerial role, do some seasonal emergency hire stuff with the state of Minnesota as a forester, or excuse me, as a wildland firefighter, then do some stuff with an incident management team with the state also. So I still have a little bit of a drive to do some civic duty and to give back a little bit. So that's still there in my heart. I've done it my whole life. So that was one reason. I think the other reason was I think my experiences on that side of the house. So not as an elected official, but as a staff member, whether it's an entry-level employee, mid-level supervisor, or upper management position. I've experienced that, so I kind of have a really good feel for what that looks like on that side, which I think would really bring a lot to the table when we're having discussions as a council. So, and probably the last consideration for me, I filed right towards the end of the filing period. It was 10 minutes before it actually closed. And at that point, I was still kind of up in the air, was kind of a coin toss, but there was no other candidates running other than the incumbent at that point. And for me, I've always thought that it's really important when we enter the ballot booth in our democracy that there's choice.
Right, and it's interesting that there were a few candidates running in Ward 4. I remember not too long ago, there were a number of special elections with a lot of people wanting to represent Ward 4. And then, you know, they'd move away and then we have to do it all over again. But anyway.
Right. It just seems to be a little different election year for some reason. We obviously had a primary here for the at-large. The other races, there just didn't seem to be a lot of candidates for whatever reason interested in running. So that was probably the other contributing factor for running. So I think I still have that desire to serve. I think I can bring some unique perspective to the council as we move forward here.
Well, what are some of the issues the city council is facing as you see it, and how would you hope to address some of them?
Sure, yeah, there's lots of exciting times coming up for the city of Bemidji here as we kind of look at what's happening down the road here. And we have some issues and challenges that we have to address today also. But as we kind of look at some of my core values and beliefs, we'll kind of just start with fiscal responsibility. That doesn't mean I'm a fiscal conservative, but fiscal responsibility, reasonable taxes and fees, being transparent in how we're spending money, how we're collecting it, number one, and then how we're spending it, number two, as we look at some of the priorities for our community. And I think that really creates an environment that hopefully we can still encourage and have good economic growth and development. I think through reasonable fees and taxes, reasonable regulations, we get the investment on the private side that we really need here in Bemidji. As we know, a large percentage of our buildings in town are tax exempt. So in order for us to truly have the financial resources to provide those core essential services that we need as a local government, we need to generate tax income through the tax-paying properties. So I'm really excited about the Rail Corridor development personally. I've heard off and on in my 11 years as fire chief, the Rail Corridor come up.
So over the past 20 years, I think the city acquired it in the early 2000s. 2001, 2002 ballpark.
Yeah, so it's been there. And I'm excited for really three big reasons. We know it. There's some pollution on it. It needs to be cleaned up.
Mm-hmm.
We've known that from day one. So there's an opportunity to clean it up. There's an opportunity in doing that to leveraging some outside resources, some state and some federal funds to do that. So instead of kicking the can down the road and having our kids clean it up, let's just do the responsible thing and get it cleaned up. So that's number one. Number two is it's not very often you have a private developer that wants to come in and buy the parcel and take on all the financial risks of developing the property. So there's a private developer that's willing to do that along with some other partners that really want to take the bull by the horns here and develop this. So the city has no financial interest in the actual development of the property directly. So
right, with the Sanford Wellness Center that's still being worked out, it would not be a city-owned facility.
Correct, yeah. So we've got the Wellness Center that is still being talked about. There's some conceptual designs out there for the Wellness Center, but Sanford is still willing to commit a significant amount of money to the Wellness Center and actually operate the Wellness Center. So it's not a municipally ran operation, which is really good. Some of the things that proposed in the Wellness Center, a couple sheets of ice, an aquatics facility, multi-use facility, just some good space downtown. And the development's also got some other things that are going to happen down there. So when we look at some multi-story buildings with maybe some residential, there may be some mixed use on the first floor. There's all kinds of different things being talked about. One of the things that I find really interesting and unique with this particular development is the fact that the developer is really has a really short, or what I would say, really assertive timeline in developing. This isn't something that looking at developing over 20 years. It's something that they want to get developed sooner than later. So the developer that I think the city's currently working with right now, which is Krause Anderson, has been down this road before. They've done lots of developments in lots of communities. So this is really great to have that. And it's, you know, the numbers that we're tentatively hearing are $100 million in building value. So when you look at that, and that's all going to be taxable property.
Yeah, the tax pie.
Yeah, the tax pie is going to get significantly larger if this comes to fruition.
But, you know, at the other end of that coin, you know, with these, you know, perhaps fabulous new buildings and stuff, like those property values nearby might go up quite a bit. And there's some low-income housing, like in lower-income folks, like in that general vicinity. What are your thoughts about, you know, keeping things a bit stable as far as, you know, the gentrification, the increasing property values, as far as the city council can control?
Right. Yeah, as we look at that, you know, I would suspect that if there is this investment done in that rail corridor, that that's going to spark a little renaissance in that area, some revitalization, improvements and some new businesses popping up in that downtown area. But we have to be careful about that as we kind of look at I call it the ripple effect.
Mm-hmm.
So as we look at one person's gain, it can't be at the expense of others in the area. So but as we look at that overall development, this would be a pretty significant development if we can bring it to town. And one that's, once again, I want to emphasize, private.
Mm-hmm.
So this is much different than some of the other larger developments that we may have seen in the past.
Or ones we may see in the very near future.
Correct. Yeah, as we kind of look at that. So
City Hall, the Fire Station 1, they're old buildings, and, you know, the City Hall flooded. So what are your ideas about, you know, what directions should the city go? I mean, it's still very much in the formative phase, you know, with figuring out costs and of a remodel versus a new build, or possibly even joining it with Fire Station 1.
Right. Yeah, I don't have a lot of info on that, Larissa. They're just kind of starting to really dive into the meat and potatoes of the project. I believe that there was a consultant hired to kind of do an assessment of the facilities. There's going to be some meetings coming up here in the near future that I plan on attending to try to get up to speed a little bit. Obviously, the downtown fire station I'm very familiar with after managing that for 11 years. And I'm also very familiar with the city hall after spending a lot of time in there doing some of the fire chief duties. So I think we've got to see what happens there. Both buildings probably could use a sprucing up and remodeling. As you mentioned, they're over 50 years old. Now, whether or not that means that they're into their useful life, I don't know yet. We'll let the engineers, the architects kind of come up with some recommendations on that. One thing we do know, though, with downtown, there's many buildings that are a lot older than those.
Oh, yeah.
We have the ability, really, to remodel existing buildings and make them functional for many, many years to come. So we kind of look at some of the space utilization, particularly at City Hall. You know, we look when that building was built, there was very little office space for city staff other than at City Hall. That's really changed over the past 20 years.
Right, the split-level design of it.
Yeah, it really wasn't. There is some space utilization challenges there, but I'm not so sure today we need as much office space in the City Hall, considering we have lots of office space throughout a lot of city buildings that didn't exist when that building was built.
Mm-hmm.
And with technology today and the ability to communicate really effectively on a little more remote basis, I think that's something that really needs to be considered. Do we really need to have everybody all under one roof? And I don't know that, and hopefully we'll find out some of that here soon when we get some info from the consultant. So,
all right. So in your campaign so far, what are some of the issues you've been hearing from the folks who live in Ward 4?
Sure. As we're kind of out and about, kind of chatting with folks, you mentioned one of them, City Hall. There's a lot of uncertainty and questioning why we need City Hall, and at times some sarcasm, you know, and why we need City Hall and, you know, things like that. So as we try to navigate through that, that's going to be important. Most of the people that I visit with that are familiar with the rail corridor development are at least neutral or positive until they get some more info on that, and hopefully more of that's coming. Folks that have been around our community for a while understand that this is not a new topic, the rail corridor.
It's what we call in the news business an evergreen. It just keeps on going.
Keeps on going, yeah. And it's so it's so that's out there right now. Just a little bit of discussion on the Curling Club Nielsen-Reese.
Ah, yes.
Not a lot, but there's a little bit on that popping up. I think some of the ice issues when the Bemidji Community Arena added that additional sheet ice here a few years ago kind of took off some of that ice pressure. So now it's really what is the next, you know, 20, 30, 40 years look like up there. So that's part of it. As always in any campaign, taxes.
Mm-hmm.
What are you going to do about taxes? That seems to be a common thread. You know, this year we're kind of in a unique position as we look at the city kind of working through their 23 budget and establishing levies. Most everybody saw a significant increase in valuation in their property, and I think a lot of people are uncertain what that looks like, including myself.
Right. No, it's hard because, you know, the assessor increases the value, you know, per state rules. You know, it has to be within like 5% of actual market value or something like that. And then, but that doesn't necessarily mean that your taxes will go up by that same amount.
Right. Yeah. And I think the biggest uncertainty is I think most people saw the largest increase in valuation than they probably have in their life.
Mm-hmm.
And I was one of them. I've been a homeowner now for, gosh, probably pushing 35 years, and I've never seen a one-year jump like that. So I'm just a little apprehensive on what that really truly means. Some of the folks that I chat with say, hey, if everybody went up a similar percentage, it shouldn't have a significant increase in the actual dollars that are leaving your pocket. I think we'll kind of see. But that is a concern for folks, just like it was when we got our proposed valuations. Was a big concern. So still have a little bit of discussion on the streets on some of the housing challenges facing our community across the board.
That's across the nation, right?
Yeah. As we kind of look at that, whether you're looking at trying to purchase a house or whether you're looking at trying to rent, I think one of the things that we discussed here recently at a meeting that I was at was, you know, looking at kind of revisiting the housing study for the Bemidji community. as we kind of look at that and kind of developing a roadmap of what needs to happen. So I think those are probably the big ones right now, except everybody is concerned about their back pocket and taxes. So
especially in this year of inflation that we have been experiencing. Well, is there anything else about you or your campaign that you wanted to be sure to get out there before I let you go today?
Yeah, I think, you know, kind of one of the other really core beliefs that I have is open, honesty, and transparent in a, as we're doing business. Let's just be open, and let's make sure that people have the facts in front of them when they're making decisions, and let's make sure that our community has the facts in front of them when we actually have made that decision so that they understand the reason why behind it. And I still circle back to maybe my seventh grade civics class and believe that government by the people, for the people. So that's still a strong belief of mine, maintaining a high level of moral integrity and really taking that the community into the, well, as we enter 2023 here, but into the future here and really setting the stage for a good, viable economic community that is open and inviting to not only those that want to live here, those who want to work here, but those that want to come visit here. So,
all right. Well, thank you so much, David Hofer, candidate for Bemidji City Council, Ward 4.
Thanks, Larissa.